my wife and me on the second floor and my daughter on the third when I specifically booked adjacent rooms. It's a single woman all alone.
Oh.
Recently single, not always alone.
Bonjour. I'm Spencer, by the way.
Jennifer. Sometimes Jenny. No, Jen. It's just Jen.
You want to get a drink with me tonight?
Yeah.
Great. I need to show you, niece.
You realize I'm going to make you tell me your whole life story?
Trust me. It's boring.
Someone who's genuinely attractive.
Did Daddy promise to be nice to him?
Not in so many words.
How did I get so lucky?
Are we gonna pretend to play basketball tonight or what?
I got dinner with Jen.
Surprise! I'm back!
Stop hurting him!
Psycho killer!
Who do you work for?
Let's just say that I work for the blah, 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 and they gave me a license to blah. Your legs.
Oh, no, you are not getting off that.
Spread them!
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Stop it! It's not shooting, honey. Oh, God!
It's gonna be a long day.
Really good.
Bravo.
Katherine Heigl. Ashton Kutcher. Fillers.
Sweetie, your gun is showing.
Well, where do you expect me to put it? Have you seen the size of this thing?
Welcome to They Called This a Movie, testing the strengths of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, Google Play, all of those good things. As you may notice, we're going to stumble through this intro because our fearless leader, Anthony's not here today. He went to the great Moe's in the sky.
Yep.
And we will miss him dearly. But yes, you can subscribe on any podcasting platform. We said iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean. Am I missing anything, Mark?
We may or may not be on Spotify. I'm never sure how Spotify works.
We're I'm everywhere. That's how the kids listen to. I think the kids listen to SoundCloud, isn't that, or something like that?
Yeah, SoundCloud rappers. Yeah. That's the next goal.
I was going to say, I'll hit up. I can't even begin to think of.
We need
one
to do remixes of Witcher songs. Need to do.
That's get on TikTok.
And we're also proud members of Geek Vibes Nation. So you can follow them. I believe it's GV Nation. On Twitter and Geeks Vibe Nation our website as well. You can find us anywhere. Ant is probably pulling his hair out, and I can't wait for the text messages.
That's what I'm excited for. Well, he was supposed to send us the intro, and maybe he did, and I just didn't check because that is very possible. Yeah. But we're gonna blame this on him.
Yeah. So as you know, when Anthony's not around, it is a garbage truck on fire with this podcast. So. That's what
he gets for going on vacation in January. Try going on vacation in the summer like a normal person, maybe, and then this won't happen.
Yeah.
But anyway,
at least he can go to Nice, France.
That's true. Well, I think he'd rather go to Nice, France than, or maybe not. I don't know. I don't want to give away his position. It's very classified. Anyway, I am Dan Aquino. With me is our good friend, Mark Myers. Say hello, Mark.
Hello, everyone. I think I went through the bit in the first half of this thing, so...
Yeah, no, we're going to say that was 100% the bit.
Yeah. So, it's probably better than half the bits I go with.
Like, I was a fan of this. I like when we kind of just... We roll a little bit, back and forth.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun. So this was the last Twitter poll episode that we did, and we had a little bit of a... Well, not a little bit. We had a tie. It was between Killers and So Undercover. So
thanks, Smilers, for not letting So Undercover win.
I am very happy that it ended up this way because I figured either way I was going to have to watch So Undercover. But now it's like a little special treat for the listeners because you get to listen to the two that you picked. So first up, we're doing the 2010 Ashton Kutcher vehicle, Killers, directed by Robert Luketic. I'm sure I am butchering that. Luketic. Starring Katherine Heigl, Ashton Kutcher, and Tom Selleck and his beautiful mustache. It has an IMDb score of 5.4 and a Rotten Tomatoes score of a very healthy 10%. And
nice. Yeah, double digits.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, I was actually expecting it to be a little higher, probably like 15-20%. But I think after watching this movie, it's a very reasonable Rotten Tomatoes score. So
it's no Sherlock and Holmes, or what it was, it Sherlock and Watson, or whatever the hell that Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly movie was.
Yeah, I think it's Watson and Holmes.
Holmes, yeah.
Right.
That was like 0% Rotten Tomatoes score at one point.
That's on demand right now. And I just think I like John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell, but just out of principle, I refuse to watch that movie. Right. I mean, everyone can't be wrong about that. That's terrible.
Yeah. And that actually leads into this. This is one of the reasons why I didn't watch this when it came out. Even when it would come on free basic cable or anything like that. It was just like, I've seen this movie. This was the time period when Ashton Kutcher and Katherine Heigl were in everything. So
I forgot how big Kutcher was. And Katherine Heigl. Yeah. I mean, one for the money, Ugly Truth, Just Married. What else was she in?
Well, she Life has, As We Know It.
Knocked Up. Right. I mean, I think that was like, she was in Grey's Anatomy, correct?
Yeah. It's right around the Grey's Anatomy.
Right, and she was, that's kind of where she blew up, and then she really hit it big with Knocked Up, and then she just kind of rode that roller coaster for a little while. The early 2010s were, like, I guess pretty big for her.
Yeah, I would say just with Kutcher as well, you know, at the end of that 70s show, maybe even into Two and a Half Men, you know, this time period, 2009 to like 11, 12, something like that. I don't have his IMDb in front of me to, you know, get that specific, but just seems like, you know, he just rolled into doing all these rom-coms, hit him and it was Mila Kunis and him that did the same movie that Justin Timberlake and Natalie Portman did.
With Just Friends was Natalie Portman, right? Oh, no, that was Mila Kunis and
Ashton Kutcher.
Okay.
And I think, well, anyway, the four of them did basically the same movie, the same year. Right. No Strings Attached and Just Friends were essentially the same movie.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so where are you coming from with this movie? You've seen it before?
No. It was one of those where I've seen the other ones, most of them that you mentioned for Katherine Heigl. Just because this was when I still had Netflix, you know, and we still had the disc plan and all that. And we just grab any random movie, you know, on a Saturday night or Sunday or something, you know, if I didn't have any plans, and we just pop in anything dumb, that would come on. Like nowadays, my free time is full with, you know, watching movies for this and doing Stranger Dame-y stuff and, and getting older and more responsibilities at work and stuff like that. But this was a time period. It was perfect. I was like 2 years out of college. You know, all these movies were hitting. This came out. I was like, I want to watch another one of those, and just didn't. And then it just flew out of my head and something else came out and, you know, went with it from there. I was excited to at least see if this was terrible or just kind of like, one of those like, sure, it's fine. You know, I could see this on USA, at like 2 o'clock on a Sunday.
Everything we watch is just like, we could see this on USA.
Well, it's not drama, so it wouldn't be on TNT.
This movie's not good enough for TNT, that's for sure.
Because TNT knows drama.
That's true. Yeah, and this is not drama. It tries to be drama at times.
Yeah.
But it doesn't succeed.
The one thing going into this is that I never understood, and we'll get in deeper as we're talking about the actual movie itself, but how Kutcher couldn't have become more of a like a comedic action star,
mm-hmm.
you know, like he has the physique,
Absolutely.
You know, and I don't know if Chris Evans like came and took, you know, and how Hemsworth and Evans are sort of that kind of comedic timing action stars.
Yeah.
You know, sort of thing, you know. But
yeah, I think Kutcher was more of like an ensemble kind of guy, where he wasn't really leading man material.
Yeah, this movie proved that to me. But that was just my thoughts before going in. It was just like, hey, why couldn't he, you know, do that? You know, he does have the comedy chops. He, you know, can look the part, as he, you know, did at times in this movie, where I could believe him as even pulling off like a John Krasinski down the road, you know.
Okay.
Sort of, you know, turning it into drama. You know, I would believe him as an agent, you know, a federal government agent or, you know, assassin. But in a, like, it's somewhere between Bond and, you know, the Pink Panther sort of thing. Like, somewhere between that, you know, sort of character. It's no Mordecai. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, I'm going to say everything you were saying, I think the complete opposite of this movie with him. I think he has the physique, that's for sure. He's in good shape, but he's very wooden, and he's only funny when there's funny people around him. So, you like Topher Grace was funny in that 70s show, Danny Masterson, the guy who played the father, Red. I forget his name, but he's funny. So when he's surrounded by funny people, it kind of builds him up. I've seen a couple of his movies where his timing is off or something, because I think it's in the delivery with him, because it just, a lot of his jokes to me fall flat.
Yeah.
And I thought this movie really highlights, like you said, it really highlights his, I don't want to say flaws. It highlights his inability to just be that leading man. And I don't think it helps being paired with Katherine Heigl, who always comes off a certain way. And I mean, even in Hollywood, it's well known that she was very difficult to work with.
Yeah, she always comes off a little too good for the role.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, this is beneath her. You can kind of see that in this movie, where she's just, she kind of turns her nose up at a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. This is probably way more, this character in this movie is probably a lot closer to what the rumors are about her in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, sort of like,
this is plays the same like character.
And, yeah.
Right. Yeah, to me, she's always the same character. I've seen her and obviously Knocked Up, this, Ugly Truth, and she sort of plays the same character in Ugly Truth, where she's just so focused on one thing, and she's always driven, and anything that comes in her way, she's just very snarky and very demeaning. And there's a point in this movie, and we were discussing this off air, where, you know, the movie's like, eh, for a little while, and then it hits the second act, and both characters just become like super mean-spirited to each other. And she really does a good job at playing mean-spirited, because she's like, she attacks. She goes for the jugular in some of these scenes.
It's kind of funny. The my first experience with Katherine Heigl was randomly finding this movie called 100 Girls on Netflix. At one point, it's not as much porny as it sounds.
That's a disappointment.
Essentially, the movie's about, you know, it's like a college, and there's an old girls dorm sort of thing. That's where the 100 girls, there's 100 girls in that dorm, is sort of what the title. I'm sorry. And it's, do you know who Matthew Tucker is, the actor?
Matthew Tucker, that sounds very familiar.
He's been in some things, like, as like a secondary, like, character.
Okay.
So he's the lead in this with Emmanuel Shrieky.
Okay, I've heard of that.
From Entourage, the girl from Entourage. Sloane.
Okay.
So they're the stars and sort of their love story, but she plays like a girl in that, and she's same thing, like you said, mean, like a little mean, you know, driven. Her whole story revolves around foosball, you know, wanting to be the best at foosball. That's her
honorable, like, achievement, I guess.
Yeah, like each girl in the movie you know, has a, you know, little story. Like the girl from Alex Mack.
Yeah, Alex Mack, yep.
Yeah. She's in it, you know, Giovanni Ribisi's sister's in it. Like, it's a lot of these young, like, actors. Like, it's not great. But, sure. You know, her character is literally, like, as you were saying that, it popped in my head going, the same person in that movie. And that might have been like one of her first roles.
Yeah, like, I think that's more of her personality bleeding through into her roles. Or yeah, maybe that's what the director asks for. But it seems like it's too frequent for it to be the director just saying, all right, yeah, play this type of character. Play demeaning, play mean.
She self-typecasted herself.
She did. I thought I read a story where that... She kind of made an apology tour around Hollywood where she would go to different directors she worked with and just said, listen, I'm sorry that I acted such and such way. But I don't think she's really found another leading role in quite a while, as far as I know.
Yeah, I'm looking up her stuff here as we're talking.
And I'll tell you what, man, Ashton Kutcher, he is, talk about box office poison. Hoo-wee.
Yeah.
He has one movie that is above 50%.
Oh, I take that back. The first movie I saw her in was Under Siege 2: Dark Territory. Ooh. I forgot that she plays his daughter in that movie.
I've never seen that
movie. Steven Seagal.
So maybe that's where she got it from.
Yeah, I forget because I kind of forgot she was even in that movie until I pulled up her thing. Because I've definitely seen that movie way more than I'd like to admit.
Can you guess what movie? You're not going to get it, but I'll let you guess.
Yeah.
The movie that the only Ashton Kutcher movie that is not rotten. Can you guess the name of it? I've never heard of it, so you're probably not.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he was like the leading role in it. It just says actor.
Yeah. The only real weird ones I can think of are, you know, the chance at Cheaper by the Dozen.
Surprisingly not.
And yeah,
I don't even think this is.
And like one of those New Year's Eve or Valentine's Day.
No, this movie is called The Man Who Saved the World. I've never heard of it. Who's in this movie? Kevin Costner, Robert De Niro, Matt Damon. So that's why. Because
he's not like the star.
There's two heavy hitters in this movie. And I think it's a... Oh, it's a documentary. Okay. Mm-hmm. About a Russian colonel. Well, so he had nothing to do with it. So that's why. We're not even counting that as his movie.
Yeah, I'm going side by side, sort of going through his IMDb on my phone and hers on my computer here. And it's kind of weird just seeing how they match up in terms of they were basically doing the same movie. Like he has a thing where 2008 is What Happened in Vegas with Cameron Diaz.
Mm-hmm.
Then Valentine's Day, this movie we're doing, No Strings Attached. And then her same thing is 27 Dresses, The Ugly Truth, Life as We Know It, Killers. And then New Year's Eve, she's in that as well.
Okay.
It's like that four-year period there, they're basically doing the same movie, you know, the same type of movie.
Now, looking through his Ashton Kutcher's movies, I'm going to bring up, I think this is wrong, in my opinion, because he has at least two movies that I enjoyed and I think should have fared better. The Butterfly Effect, I thought was a pretty good movie. They have that at 33%. And Dude, Where's My Car? Because that is just so stupid. But it's meant to be stupid. So I don't know why people would... It's rated at 17%.
Well, it's not a great movie.
Does
it have audience score there?
Does it have an audience score? It has an audience score of 47%. Wow.
I
thought it would be higher.
So did I, but that's more probably in line the quality of the movie.
Yeah.
Being more like middle of the pack. I mean,
forgot Jennifer Garner's in that movie.
Yeah, she's in it. You know, it gives you, like, a lot of his movies, like, we could go back and forth, you know, before we, you know, get into the plot and all that here. But, you know, we sort of have both their movies, which is cool that we picked them to kind of, because they fit so well in a certain time period.
Right.
That we all sort of are aware of their movies, whether we've seen them or not.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Like I could say, hey, One for the Money. And you're like, oh, wait, no, I didn't see that one. That one's not this one. Right. And you know, you can't.
When I picked this movie, Killers, I honestly thought I was picking the Cameron Diaz and Tom Cruise movie Night and Day.
Hey, okay.
So, but I
thank
I want
you
to,
because I think that might have been worse than this movie.
Well, I want to apologize to Tom Cruise for confusing him with Ashton Kutcher. I hope, because I know he's a very avid listener to this podcast. I hope he doesn't come after me in his jet fighter that he was training for in the new Top Gun movie. And
that's fine. They'll just make you go clear and we'll be fine.
I don't know if I have enough money to get that high or anything.
Yeah, but yeah,
I wouldn't succeed in Scientology.
Yeah. So final thoughts on this whole thing is that this is definitely one of those movies, like I say, got caught up in, you know, a whole bunch of movies that came out in that. Mm-hmm. Looking at this, if we just take Her Knocked Up, that's a bad 2007 as the early one, because he has some stuff like while he was on that 70s show that you would remember, like Dude, Where's My Car?
Right.
And, you know, things like that, that we'll just eliminate. There's all these movies that I know the names of, but I can't remember if I've seen them. And same with his movies. It's like,
but you know, they're there.
Yeah. It's like they got into some kind of zeitgeist that wasn't like, oh, everyone in the world knows these things. It's like just some weird thing for those of us that had Netflix or, or obsessed with like just scrolling through IMDb for random things. Like, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. And, yeah, I'm actually glad I watched it because it, kind of filled in a little bit of a blank for me going, all right, good.
Yeah,
I don't
you
have
can
to
kind of catch your bearings.
A
but
yeah,
bit.
I don't have to worry about this, you know, but.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, it had a budget of $75 million.
It's that was opening all Tom Selleck's mustache.
Right. Yeah. It went all to grooming his mustache. And I think getting Catherine O'Hara plenty of booze.
Yes.
So that's probably that was probably a good $60 million of the budget right there.
Yeah.
And the rest was for Katherine Heigl and Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
It made on its opening weekend $15.8 million. Ew. So it bombed. Yeah, not good. And the worldwide gross was $98 million. So I'm going to say this probably, if it didn't break even, it probably lost a little money.
Yeah, but
on a budget of $75 million.
Well, them on track for a couple more movies?
I guess, but not many more, right?
This was the end of the train, because I would assume if we wanted to go through the research, which I'm sure the listeners out there probably wouldn't have cared less about, is that I would love to know if you go through hers, like Knocked Up, mm-hmm. it's probably a high percentage. Not high, but, you know.
Higher.
Yeah, and then 27 Dresses is probably a little lower. And the Ugly Truth is probably a little lower, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a decline. It's a very evident decline, that's for sure.
And then it gets all the way down to New Year's Eve, and she probably already shot that because it was an ensemble movie, with a bunch of different segments. And then you can kind of see where the train started to run out in terms of things she had made.
Yeah,
that didn't come out before, the lack of money making became a problem.
Yeah.
You know, because she only makes 10 movies after this between 2010 and now.
Oh, okay. So I think people started to catch on that it wasn't worth casting her.
Yeah. And, you know, she did some, you know, episodes of TV shows, but not anything great after she left Grey's.
Right. Yeah. It just, people got tired of her.
Yeah.
I could understand why, because she's just the same person all the time.
Yeah, but he does nothing after 2.5 Men until 2019. So
that killed a lot of careers.
2015 to 2019, you know, doing things.
2.5 Men was on CBS, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he's on the show The Ranch.
Oh, that's on Netflix, yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard it's pretty terrible.
Yeah, so that might have been what he was doing in the meantime, but it's just like he has like 2 casting credits after 2015.
The Ranch has Sam Elliott on there and his mustache.
Well, I mean, a show called The Ranch has to have Sam Elliott in it.
I think it's just like, if you don't, you probably open a portal to hell or something like that.
So
right?
It's the thing about cowboys and the West. All right, did we get Sam Elliott?
We need to find a Sam Elliott replacement soon, because once he goes, I think just Westerns die out. The genre of the Western is gone because you can't have it. You can't do it.
One right now.
Right.
We need to
clone Sam Elliott. Someone take a piece of his mustache hair. But anyway, how about we get into the plot of this stinker?
Let's go ahead and do it. So we'll take a quick break here for a word from the friend of the podcast. Be right back.
Hello, Internet. I'm Mark, the DM of the Main Damies D&D podcast, Stranger Damies. I just thought I'd jump in here to let you guys know that new episodes post every Wednesday on themaindamie.com, iTunes, Google Play, wherever you get your podcast. If you like what you hear on They Call This a Movie, I'm sure you'll love us. Be sure to check us out. We're barreling towards episode 100, and it's going to be a special one. We know you'll enjoy it, but for now, stay tuned for the rest of our analysis of the Katherine Heigl flick, Killers.
All right, welcome back to They Call This a Movie. We're going to jump into the plot of Killers from 2010. So the movie opens up with a close-up of Katherine Heigl. Not terrible. That's not a terrible thing to open up to, right? I mean,
no,
she's easy on the eyes at this point.
Yeah.
And then we see that she is with her parents, Tom Selleck and Catherine O'Hare, and her giant wine glass.
Yeah. Going into this movie, if you went and saw this opening weekend and had no critics thing about it, and your opening scene is you just see Tom Selleck and Catherine O'Hare show up, and you're like, okay, I think I can hang with this movie.
Right.
For a while.
Absolutely.
And then it sort of...
It goes downhill real quick. Yeah, downhill real quick.
Even in this scene, you have
a good setup. You have a great setup because Tom Selleck is very, he's being very concise. Right? He's very authoritative in this movie. And you can see he's a man who knows what he wants. And you're like, awesome. Tom Selleck is going to bitch some people out. He's going to, he's going to wield that power of his mustache and just make everyone look like less of a man. And it doesn't really do that. And they definitely waste a good setup up here. So,
And they write a joke in here that after I thought about it, I was like, where he goes, we were so safe, we kept our seatbelts on while having sex one time. And I'm like,
right.
Ow. I'm like, what?
I don't think they know how seatbelts work. Or sex.
Do they seatbelt it together?
I don't think they know how sex works. Because they're talking about how they were making love in the car, but they somehow both kept their seatbelts on. Unless this is like a minivan and he's in the middle and she's right next to him, I don't know how he's doing that.
It probably looked good on paper or in the writer's room if there were multiple writers.
Well,
put it on the board. This joke's great. So safe they kept their seatbelts on.
Put it on the board. Go, Jerry. Yes. So we find out that Katherine Heigl, her character Jen, and her parents are flying to Nice, France. Jen has just broken up with a longtime boyfriend, and her parents are super protective of her, and they're going to show her a good time. Or just to get away. Either way, it's basically they're helicopter parents, right? They're always making sure that she's where they want her to be. She has to check in at all times, and it's not a bad life because they're loaded, as we find out at one point. So listen, you take the good with the bad, all right, Jen?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But essentially, Jen is known as very cautious. She doesn't take any chances. She's not very fun to be around. So she's going to try to break that trend on this trip to France.
Yeah, she has the good joke, which they call back later, with the, it never looks good to vomit in public.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's such a weird callback joke.
They do it twice, by the way.
I feel like they do it more than that.
Yeah, but right? I meant, like, literally, just between her and Aston, they do it twice. We'll get into it. They do it with her talking about it, and then she actually does it.
Okay.
You know?
So Jen and her parents get to the hotel, and Jen is stuck on... Well, she's not stuck on.
Before this, do they do the spy movie opening with Ashton Kutcher before we get to the hotel?
Yes. And they do, like, the spy, like, the drone plane. is, yeah. or there's a computer somewhere that's tracking him.
With very 90s Perfect Dark graphics.
Yeah, and they have like the circle on him, and then it zooms in real quick on him. Spencer is driving through the roads of France, and he plants a bomb on a helicopter.
Yeah.
So then he arrives at the hotel, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. He drives up, and he walks out with that model, you know, and then right. they walk into the hotel, and that's when we run into Katherine Heigl and her parents.
Right. Yeah. So Katherine Heigl is on the elevator at this point. She's going down to the main floor, and she runs into Spencer, who is Ashton Kutcher's character. So Spencer starts talking French, and she just kind of blathers, you know, like trying to pretend, oh, yeah, you know, that's so funny. I get it, you know.
Yeah, you left out the best part, that he's shirtless.
Well, he's shirtless for a lot of this movie, right? I want to say, like, at least a little less than half of this movie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he shows up on the elevator shirtless, and she's all hot and bothered.
She got the vapors. Right away.
Yeah, she's got the vapors. Oh, my. That Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah.
So she thinks that she's being clever with just, like, nodding. Oh, yeah, you know, I get it. And he's speaking perfect French. And he follows her down to the ocean or the beach, and they have a little discussion. Where Ashton Kutcher asked Katherine Heigl for a date that night.
Yeah, so, after she finally reveals she doesn't speak French the entire time.
Yeah, which is like a cliche that I really hate, where, you know, someone will speak a foreign language and the other character will just like nod or go, oh yeah, you know, definitely. It's done to death, and this one was done just so boringly. It's so clear that she doesn't understand French. And then he asked, well, why did you think that you, why did you pretend to know it? Really? You're a spy. You can't pick up these things that she doesn't know a foreign language.
She's normal. He's in the love bubble, as we find out.
Oh, come on. That's not normal. That's not normal. Get out of here.
I knew I had to bring that up because I knew I'd get that pissed off reaction.
Yeah, well, yeah. He winds up falling in love with Jen because he's this dangerous spy, and you know, he has the license to kill, but he wants normal. So he picks Katherine Heigl, who's, you know, obviously not normal. She's smoking hot.
Yeah, even though they're, you know, sort of trying to play her off as normal. There's multiple points in this. Well, and also, surprise, surprise, it's a romantic comedy where love at first sight happens. Their meet cute is in an elevator here with him shirtless.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
who you haven't seen that movie. Yeah. So this movie is very by the numbers for a little while. I'll give it that for a little while. Yeah, and then it kind of goes off the rails.
Yeah. Because it, in the next scene or, you know, where when they get to their date, there's stuff that happens. You know, going back to your point, she does like the robot voice, you know, and then goes, oh, yeah, I'm a hit with nerds, you know, sort of like that's them trying to say she's just a normal girl that would never get a guy this hot.
Right. Yeah. She doesn't know how to act around good looking guys,
you know,
and I guess her this being was
a smoke show. And
right. Come on.
Or at least, you know, their attempts to tame her down, you know, still make her a 9.
So she's born to a super wealthy family. She's a 10, but she doesn't know how to act around guys. Yeah. Really? Come on. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Who are you trying to fool, movie? Yeah. Not us.
And the whole thing where, you know, before the date, because we can fast forward to that, is that she basically just needs to go out and get a dress.
Right.
You know, she didn't bring a cute dress.
Right. To Nice, France. I didn't bring a cute dress to France, the city of love.
You know. Exactly. You know.
But and meanwhile, her parents are dressed to the nines, and she's just wearing like her, you know, her mom jeans or whatever. I don't know what the hell she's wearing.
Yeah.
But
it just made the excuse. Everything in this movie, and maybe I'm just explaining movies, but everything in this movie occurs for something to call back to it later.
That's like, how it seems.
You know, like there's not like it. Nothing in this movie is not setting up something later, which is, I don't know if that's just, I just got really in tuned with this, you know, while watching this movie, or if that happens in most movies, probably most romantic comedies it does. But like, you know, her needing to buy the dress leads to a joke at the end of the you know, at the end of the date.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, did that, you know, the whole setup of her needing that was meant for something else later, not any character flaw in her.
Like, but I like when she buys the dress and it turns out she can't afford it.
Yeah.
How? Yeah. How could she not
She's
afford it?
She's an independent
it?
Woman, Dan.
Yeah. But she doesn't then need she immediately says, well, no, then she immediately says, yeah, yeah. I'll have my daddy buy it. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. All right. Well, then why didn't you just ask your dad to buy the dress? This could have easily been avoided.
It's so many. That is definitely a movie.
Yes.
You know, we went through it with the Christmas at the Cranks, where it's like, there's so many things, mm-hmm. you know, that if he just does one thing, not all of them, just one of them.
Yeah.
It's a much better situation. Like this is just have the dad buy the dress. But no, she doesn't want them to know she's going on the date. And,
it's a cluster.
It's a cluster.
Right. They have their date and it goes off super well. They fall
best
in
part
love.
Of it is that they make mention of Tom Selleck's mustache.
They do. And I'm glad they did that because no other movie that I've seen Tom Selleck in or TV, I don't even think Blue Bloods talks about his mustache, which is a crime unto itself.
Yeah.
I feel like in this podcast, we spend a lot of time making Simpsons jokes and Tom Selleck mustache reference.
I mean, it needs to be celebrated. It's only going to be around for so long.
Right. Tom Selleck.
Before he either goes or he milkshake ducks because he's ripping off old people with reverse mortgages.
I think he has a little bit more class than that, Mark. But tomorrow we see him on the the AARP commercial. Oh no, not you, Tom.
Yeah, he does, by the way.
Oh, he does?
Yes.
Oh, I thought that was like Alex Trebek.
You didn't know the joke. No, Trebek does life insurance.
Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I didn't know he did that. Life or whatever. I thought he was above that.
No, he makes statements where it's like, no, why would I? He even opens it with, why would I, you know, ever get involved with something? Like, you know, it's real weird.
Like he's trying to legitimize it.
Yeah.
It's me, friend Tom Selleck. Why would I get involved in a reverse mortgage scam? So anyway,
diabetes. Diabetes.
Diabetes. They go on the date. They fall in love. We have a little bit of a fast forward with them in France, you know, swimming and making out and probably having all kinds of weird sex.
It's time for a montage.
Yeah, it's time for a montage. And then we cut to Spencer and Jen having lunch, and everything is going well. But then Spencer sees out of the corner of his eyes the shady-looking character sitting on the bench. And you can immediately tell, all right, some spy stuff's about to happen. But spy stuff does not really happen here, mm-mm. and it's a little bit of a disappointment. The shady guy turns out to be Spencer's boss, Holbrook, played by Martin Mull.
I was excited.
He's the DJ. I know him as the DJ from Jingle All the Way, right? Yeah. He's the guy.
Also in Roseanne.
Oh, okay. That's right. I remember him as the, he's giving away the Turbo Man voucher. We will have one eventually. Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donner. I could do another Schwarzenegger impression, but we'll leave that for next time.
Leave that for the next time.
Right.
There are plenty of more.
Oh, God. So Holbrook informs Spencer that he's got another job for him to do, and it turns out to be a friend of Spencer's. So Spencer says he's done. He's found this woman that's normal. He's in the love bubble, and he's given it up. He's given up the spy life. Yeah. So
he does the cool spy thing of Martin Mull yells, you know, you can't walk away from it. And he puts the glasses on and goes, watch me.
Yeah.
I was like, that sounded so much cooler when they wrote that down.
This would have been so awesome if it was 1993.
Yeah. Or another
act. Right. Yeah. If it was Tom Cruise. So Spencer does walk away. He leaves the life. And we fast forward to 3 years later. He's at Tom Selleck and Catherine O'Hara's house. And they're shooting clay discs. I know there's a word for that. But I'm just going to call it shooting clay discs.
I think it's pigeon.
You might be right. I've never held a gun in my life, so I have zero clue what they're doing.
Skeet shooting.
Skeet shooting. There we go.
That's it. Thank you, Duck Hunt, for the Nintendo.
They're shooting skeet. They're skeet, skeeting all over there. So you can sense there's a little uneasiness between Spencer and Mr. Kornfeldt, a.k.a. Yeah. Tom Selleck. Okay. And Spencer informs Tom Selleck that he's going to marry Jen. And they kind of have a little bit of a back and forth.
And says it in such an odd way. Like, the sentence structure itself is like, yes. I'm asking for your permission that I am going to marry her.
Like, right. Wait. So it's kind of like that song, right? Like, why you got to be so rude?
Yeah.
He's going to marry her anyway. Yeah. So what's the difference?
Yeah. I wondered if I would put this more on the writers than them leaving a take in where Ashton Kutcher completely butchers the line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially since he's a producer on this movie that I just found out scrolling through it.
Oh, that's perfect.
You know, he wouldn't have let that stay as a producer. So it was definitely, you know, it was just so weird, that scene. But, you know, it did have one cool moment was the, you know, where they keep trying to show you, remember, he's a spy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the disc comes out late and he's like, oh, your disc, you missed it. You got to pay attention to details. And he just spins around with the gun and breaks it and goes, all right. And then just back into the conversation. It was like, okay, right. I can see what they were trying to do here.
Yeah. And again, it's another kind of trope where Well, I don't remember in the Eagle Scouts. I don't think in the Eagle Scouts you actually did skeet shooting.
No. He mentions that and the Marines.
That's right. Yeah. And then, of course, Spencer says the old Semper Fi. You got to say Semper Fi as soon as someone mentions the word Marines. At any time, you yell it out. They're bonding over skeet shooting, and you can tell that Mr. Kornfeldt he's a little uneasy. He doesn't really trust Spencer, but once Spencer shoots that clay disc, Mr. Kornfeldt is sold. Yep, you can have my wife. You know how to shoot clay. Man for my daughter. My daughter, either not one. My wife. You can have my wife.
I mean, Catherine O'Hara would be down. I don't know.
I hate how Catherine O'Hara is just like a drunk in like every movie now after Beetlejuice. Well, actually,
she's
after,
real good at the end of this, which I'll express more on when we get there. But
so he winds up marrying. They wind up getting married, Spencer and Jen, and they have a nice little life for themselves. They have a nice house.
The best part, I don't know if it happens, if you're getting to it, or if it happened before, but there's that scene where he blindfolds her to show her the new office.
I was going to get to that.
No reason she's in a bra.
I was going to get
like.
I did notice that when it's their 3-year anniversary. It's coming up on Spencer's birthday. It's coming up on Spencer's birthday, and we're in a scene where Spencer has Jen blindfolded, leading her through the house, this majestic house, and she's wearing a skirt and a bra.
Yeah, the bottom half of a power skirt.
Right,
like,
right. Yeah, she's getting ready to go to work, essentially.
Yeah.
So I listen. I'm not complaining because it.
No.
And then, so let me just. I'll finish that part. I'm not complaining. So. Yeah. She's. I don't know if it was her idea or Kutcher's idea or the director's idea, but I give him credit for that one. The part that weirded me out the most in this scene was after. He gives her a gift, which is remodeling her office, and it looks lovely, very good, very well done, good job, Ashton. He kisses her boobs, very creepily, and I feel like only like real married couples do that. You know what I mean? Like that's not something you would want to show in a movie.
Because it's fifth on that.
Yeah. No, I've done that.
Okay.
Listen, I've done that, and even to me, it's creepy. And then even Jen will just be like, why are you
doing
that?
That's saying something.
Yeah, exactly. If it's creepy to me, you know there's a problem. And Jen will tell me that, like, hey, why did you do that? I don't know, I thought it was funny, and it's not funny. It's not funny. It's not sexy. It's just kind of weird. But they're digging it.
That definitely seems like a director move here.
I would imagine so, right? And I'm surprised you agreed.
Because I don't think Ashton Kutcher ad libs kissing her boob, because that is a way to get your production shut down.
yeah. That
even in 2010, I mean, it definitely doesn't happen in 2019 at all. This scene she has workshop. A T-shirt on, you know.
Right. But yeah, that's not something you workshop. That's not something you ad lib for sure. But yeah, and then they wind up getting it on that desk, or we're led to believe at least they do it. Yeah. Wink, wink. So then they go about their separate ways. They go about their day. Spencer running into some neighbors, informing him that there's going to be a block party, and Catherine or not Jen going to work and, you know, knocking it out of the park because she's a strong businesswoman and she's better than all the men.
I absolutely love rolling back a little bit at the way Alex Borstein commits to every character.
She's hilarious. Alex Borstein,
like, she is in this role in even two or three scenes she's in.
When I enjoyed watching her even on Mad TV, she was so funny in Mad TV.
Yeah.
Probably there was only like two or three people that I thought were funny ever on Mad TV. Alex Borstein, Will Sasso, and I liked, what was his name? I can't remember his name. The tall, skinny white guy. And he did the kid. I don't wanna. I forget what that guy's name is. But that's how funny I found him. I don't even know his name.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Alex Borstein is one of the neighbors. And she's inviting Spencer and Jen to a block party. So Jen is talking to her friends at work, and they're talking about the 3-year itch or whatever. Was it the 3-year snooze? Something along those lines, where they tell Jen.
With the criminally underrated Casey Wilson.
Is that who that was?
Yeah, that's the girl from Happy Endings.
That's what I was like. I wonder how he's going to get to that, because I have no clue what that is. But now I know.
Happy Endings is a show that was on ABC, and it's most famous for, it had, I think, one of the Wayne's sons, I think maybe the Damon Wayne's Jr., maybe.
Okay.
One of them. And he had been in it's the only reason I know about Happy Endings, is that he was in the pilot for New Girl, but he was also in Happy Endings, and Happy Endings got, like, quote-unquote canceled, but not officially, so he went and did the pilot for, you know, New Girl. That got picked up, and then all of a sudden ABC picked up Happy Ending.
Okay.
You know, for another season. Theoretically, probably, I would think, knowing the way broadcast TV works, is to keep him, because he was probably the biggest name.
Yeah. Yeah.
On Happy Endings. You know, even though it had the girl from 24, Girl Next Door.
Elijah Cuthbert?
Yeah. You know, she might have been, like, from that, but, you know, it the only reason I know, I don't even know if it's a good show, but it's,
neither do I, because I've never even heard of it.
Casey Wilson's great on that, and she's an SNL, I believe.
Okay.
I'm going to double check that. I think
one of the side, like one of the side characters, kind of thing.
Yeah, she was on SNL from 08 to 09, so 2 years.
Okay. Well,
she's speaking of our show, she's her creative partner is June Diane Raphael.
I don't know who that is.
That's Paul Scheer's wife.
Oh, is that who that is? Okay.
Yeah.
Damn, that sounds bad, because we've seen them live, and I'm like, yeah, I have no clue who that is.
Yeah.
Just goes to show my memory is shit.
Yeah, yeah. And also, she's real good in Gone Girl. But enough about Casey Wood.
So, she's having a conversation with Jen, pretty much telling her that after 3 years, you get complacent in your relationship. But then it turns out that they, like, bang constantly. So if I'm Jen, I pay no heed to that. Like, yeah, you know, we're always having sex.
Casey Wilson leaves that part out, you know, of her statement is that, but if you're having sex, then don't worry about the 3 years news.
Right. But in my head, if my friend comes to me like, oh, Dan, 3 years, listen, things start to go downhill after 3 years. I'm like, well, I'm getting it on like every day, sometimes multiple times a day. I mean, If I could cut it back to maybe once a day, okay. I mean, not terrible. But that, according to Jen, they do it constantly. They have naked Saturdays. That's a real line. Naked Saturdays. So there's no snooze.
That sounds like a Barstool thing.
Welcome to Naked Saturday. Well, Saturdays are for the boys.
Yeah.
Thankfully, that's gone away. And I haven't seen that in quite a while. I hope it stays away.
That was partially me trying to make that reference and see if people could piece together why Barstool Naked Saturdays. And, you know, we're workshopping jokes here on this podcast. That's what we do.
It's what we do best. Yeah. So how are we going to tie this into Barstool?
Naked Saturdays. Saturdays are for the boys. Got it.
Bingo. So she now Jen has it in her head that something's wrong. Something's amiss. And we cut to Spencer's job where he's just kind of talking to Rob Riggle, not really doing much.
He's like, again, Rob Riggle being Rob Riggle in this movie. But he's essentially, I guess, a architect designer, which I don't know how that translated from his assassin job.
Right. How did he... Yeah, he's like a head contractor. Where's the paperwork there, man?
Yeah.
Who helped you get that job?
Yeah.
Because that's...
we do find out later where my help happened, but...
Probably, but...
At the twist, yeah.
But beforehand, I immediately thought the same thing. Like, well, how did you become like the head foreman when you've had zero skill or zero experience? But, you know, listen, Hollywood magic.
And Rob Riggle, just being Rob Riggle in this time period.
Yeah, just constantly shouting and being vulgar. It's whatever. It's fine. It's Rob Riggle. It's what you. It's like you said. It's what you come
it's
to
expect. It's what you hire him for.
Exactly. You're going to get the pow. You're going to get a lot of that. And, you know, he does that for a good amount of time. But he, you know, Spencer and Rob Riggle are basically Henry is his character. Spencer and Henry are just shooting the shit, you know, hitting on the secretary, hitting on one of their fellow co-workers, being very crass. And Spencer walks into his office and he has a package. And the package appears to be from his old boss, Holbrook.
Yeah. Yeah. It's again, like I said, everything in this movie happens to tie into a callback later in the movie.
Yes.
Like the book he gets delivered is the Traveler's Guide to France or whatever it is. It's the same book that he gets delivered on the date, you know.
Right.
With the postcard in it before. You know.
Yeah.
There's nothing in this movie that stands independent of itself.
Right. There's no subtlety in this movie whatsoever. Even the twist is, I don't know about you, the twist was super obvious. And they give it away very early on.
Yeah.
But we'll save that for obviously when we get to it. So Spencer makes a call to there's a little postcard that comes with the book. He makes a call to the hotel that he stayed at where he met Jen, and he talks to Holbrook. So while this is going on, Mr.
Well, I think, you can correct me. I just watched this again another time. I think he calls a motel in the town, but the XOXO whatever is like a code in the book. And he's got to go through the book and decipher the code.
That's right.
Figure out, you know, where, and it's like some convoluted thing that they don't explain like why he would know to do this if outside of just going, it's spy shit.
Right. So now, obviously, when that postcard comes and it says XOXO on it, you immediately know what's going to happen next. And what immediately happens next is Mr. Kornfeld comes in, sees that Spencer's on the phone, and he sees the postcard that says, call me XOXO. So, I mean, what kind of spy shit is that, dude?
Yeah, and a protective father even, you know, sees XOXO, quick hang up, you know, daughter's going out of town, you know.
Right. Yeah, so... And then he drops it like it's, he doesn't even really mention it. You know what I mean? Tom Selleck just kind of goes, oh, well, I'm here to take you to dinner on Jen's request for your birthday. And that's it. He doesn't even like, oh, you know, he goes, what's with the postcard? Oh, you know, it's old boss. Oh, okay. Well, let's go to dinner. All right, cool.
His whole job there is to get him to what's going to happen next.
Yes. So we enjoy a very unfunny and uncomfortable car ride with Spencer and Mr. Kornfeld.
Which is how I would imagine all my car rides with Tom Selleck would be.
No, I don't think it would be uncomfortable. I think he's a nice guy, man. I don't care how many old people he rips off. I think he's
We're
a
just
nice
gonna put
guy.
That into the ether that he rips off old people.
Rip off old people. Watch Blue Bloods and then sign up for a reverse mortgage. Only on CBS, America's most
and then and then pay for a life insurance policy by Alex Trebek after you get your diabetes medicine delivered by Wilfred Brimley.
That's the trifecta
of commercials on.
I was going to say it's the trifecta of daytime commercial. There. We need a fourth one for a Mount Rushmore.
It's a Seattle's commercial.
Well, we could put Shaq up there for his the general.
General. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
The auto insurance. So we'll put Shaq up. If you have a different one, let us know. So we get to Spencer's
house. Tom Schuster on Twitter.
At Tom Schuster. Tell us your Mount Rushmore of daytime commercial spokesperson. Yeah, either way. So we get to the house and it's dark, and immediately Spencer thinks Holbrook has sent someone for him or he's there. Some shit's about to go down, right?
Yeah.
So he convinces Mr. Kornfeld to, hey, listen, I think I left my keys in the car. Can you go check? Yeah, you know, and Mr. Kornfeld gives him shit, saying he's really not a man for doing that, you know.
Because a real man puts it in the garage, you know.
Right. A real man does this, a real man does that. So he's very disappointed in Spencer, and he gives him shit for it. Spencer goes in, and it's a surprise party. Jen threw a surprise party for him, and all the neighbors are there, all the coworkers are there, and Tom Selleck doesn't seem like he's very thrilled about it. He just kind of gives him a pat on the back and like...
About to pull a gun.
Right. Yeah, Spencer was getting ready to light the place up.
Yeah.
He's very twitchy. Yeah, it's just a surprise party, but he doesn't seem so happy about it. And Jen notices this. Jen thinks that something's wrong because Spencer's not happy. He's very distracted.
Yeah. I do got to say, I don't know if this was ad-libbed or if it was in the script, but Catherine O'Hara coming in late and yelling surprise was probably the only moment in this movie that made me chuckle.
Yeah, that was actually pretty good. And as you said before, she's probably the best part of this movie. But she's criminally underused. And I read some trivia that throughout the movie, every scene she's in, her wine glass gets bigger.
Yeah.
So just really driving it home that she drinks, and that's kind of shitty.
Yeah, her and Alex Borstein were a completely underused movie.
Yeah. Alex Borstein is very, very. She plays the annoying neighbor. Like, hey, you got to come to this. You got to make sure you come to the block party. All right, well, we'll hope to see you there. Here's another one.
Yeah, she's the better version of the Dan Aykroyd character.
Yes. Much more likable. So Jen notices that Spencer seems a little, he's a little distant. Something's not right. So Jen has a flight to San Francisco the next day, and she's a little on the fence about going. She's not sure what she wants to do. They wake up the next day. I don't think I'm missing anything big here, Mark, but if I am, let me know.
No. It's essentially, you know, this is when Casey Wilson's character reveals that if you're still having sex, then ignore everything I said.
Okay.
You know, that's really the only thing that happens. And Rob Riggle and the sexy Rob Riggle being, you know, the character he is and the, you know, supposedly cougar type secretary hitting on Ashton Kutcher.
Right. And that really goes nowhere.
Yeah, nowhere.
Right. So it's kind of useless.
Especially when the whole movie just turns on its head, like right after this scene.
100%. So that's So the next day, Rob Riggle has stayed over because he was hammered. Jen.
Or was he?
dun, dun, dun. Spencer is still kind of distant. He's got a lot on his mind. And Jen thinks that something's up. So she leaves. Spencer kind of rushes her out the door to get to the flight and like, oh, you know, we'll talk later. Gives her like a quick kiss and she's driving down the road and she has a change of heart. She's like, you know what? Something's not right. I'm going to go back. Cut back to the house. Rob Riggle is up. They're talking. Spencer and Rob Riggle are talking. And Rob Riggle asks Spence if he could get him some coffee.
Answering a text message.
Yes. Yeah. So because there's a little beep and Spencer goes, is that you or me? And Rob Riggle goes, oh, that's me. I'm like, oh, all right, that's you.
Oh, can I have some milk?
Yeah. You got any milk here? Yeah. So they do, again, another cliche. He opens the door and the camera's right on Spencer and the fridge. You don't see anything else. So immediately you probably know what's about to happen. He closes the door. Rob Riggle's there with a knife and he slashes at him. Spencer's like, yo, what's going on here, man? I thought we were buds. I thought we were cool. And little does he know, Spencer, or Henry, Rob Riggle's character, is an assassin that was sent to kill Spencer.
Yeah. It's one of those cliches in these movies where it's like, oh, the assassin has been near you the whole time.
Right. And it probably would have just been better if he had killed him at any point in his life of knowing him. But it has to be this moment.
Well, credit to the movie, we find out later why, but...
It's weird.
They at least try to explain it, even though it's awful.
Yeah. It's the most absurd plot point of all time. So they get into a big fight. It's a decent action scene. They're crashing through the banisters. They're, you know, smashing glasses over each other, again, thrown through windows and whatnot. Yeah. But again, not great. Decent.
It's supposed to be a little sloppy because Rob Riggle is, you know.
Well, he was a Marine, Semper Fi.
Yeah. Yeah, but in this scene, he's supposed to be like a doofy assassin.
Yeah, I guess so. But, I mean, he's got some moves. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So while this is going on, Jen gets back home and she wants to surprise Spencer. And to her surprise, her house is now a giant mess. Yeah. And the next thing she knows, Rob Riggle and Spencer come crashing through the window. She's freaking out. And Spencer tells her, go upstairs. There's a Glock in the, I think it's the bathroom.
No, it's in the dresser drawer in there.
The dresser drawer.
Like the end table or whatever.
Surprisingly, she never saw it.
I think he put it there from last night.
Yeah, the night before, I think. So she runs upstairs, grabs the Glock, comes back down, shoots Rob Riggle in the leg, and they tie up Rob Riggle.
I didn't think you'd actually shoot him.
Right. Well, first of all, Ashton Kutcher has Rob Riggle in a headlock and says to shoot him in the face. That is putting a lot of trust into your wife of 3 years, who's never held a gun before.
Yeah.
That's pretty much asking myself. I don't know if you've ever shot a gun, Mark, but that's like asking you or I to, shoot this guy in the face while I'm standing right there.
Yeah, we could probably do a hit the biggest mass on a person, maybe.
Yeah, I mean,
with a handgun.
And Rob Riggle he's a big boy. So we could probably hit him there, but
somewhere between, shoulders and knees, like she does, shoots him in the leg. But.
Right. So it's not attempted murder. I could not. Don't tell me to shoot someone in the face when your face is right there.
Yeah.
So they tie up Rob Riggle's character, Henry, and they try to get some information out of him. Riggle doesn't really give him much, says that he was put there to kind of, keep an eye on him, basically, and there's a $20 million bounty that's been placed on Spencer's head.
Yeah, they do the fun thing, which I didn't get a laugh out of, but I could see them going for it, was the fact that he chipped his teeth, so he had a lisp sort of thing as he was explaining everything to them, which I assume was supposed to be this hilarious, funny moment, but it was just distracting to me.
So now, as Mark mentioned earlier, this is where the movie really just gets turned on its head and becomes just like a completely different movie. A sniper opens up fire on Spencer and Jen, and they're running for their lives now. A car chase ensues with Spencer, Jen, and Henry.
And there's a continuity error here, I think.
Oh, is there?
I haven't watched the movie twice. I don't think his truck's in the garage when she pulls out to go on the trip.
Oh, I'm not sure. Well, I thought Tom Selleck puts it in the garage, but you could be right. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, technically, I think storyline-wise, it's supposed to be in there. Mm-hmm. But I think when she pulls away, I think it's in the driveway. I think you see it.
Right.
I may be mistaken. So
yeah, you might. I've only seen it once, so you might be right. But
for some reason, it popped in my head when it happened. I was like, get in there,
Yeah. Yeah, it could be a mistake. Well, we'll have to write to Ashton Kutcher. Get it figured out.
Sure,
make sure he knows he fucked up. So they go on a car chase, and they wind up driving Henry off of a little cliff onto a construction site into some rebarb.
Drives him to the opening scene of Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Oh, there you go. they push him into some rebar, essentially killing him. So from this point on, it's your run of the mill. It could be anyone. You don't trust anyone. Anyone could be a killer. And everyone is a fucking killer in this movie at this point.
Yeah, we'll get to that at the end with our make it better parts. But I think the one thing to mention here, we can sort of, go through the rest of the plot pretty fairly quickly here. I might interject once in a while, but it's very standard from here on out. Is I did like the one little acting moment. Between Ashton Kutcher and Katherine Heigl here, when he walks back from looking at the car in the ditch, She just goes, "Is he?" And he goes, "Yes." Like, sort of like, "Yep."
Right.
Don't finish that sentence. Yeah.
We
both know what happened here. Like, that was a good, like, you know, moment of those characters. Like, he's a trained assassin that it comes up later. He mentions that.
His training. You know,
that he's zoned and she's freaking the fuck out because they killed their friend.
Right. Yeah, she's a normal person. So now here's the problem with this. At this point, Spencer and Jen become incredibly mean-spirited towards each other. After no indication earlier on, because everything seemed like they loved each other, they're joking around, they're very flirtatious. At this point, they're just digging into each other. Spencer's making fun of Jen's parents. Jen is just like going after like pretty much anything that he says.
I thought you were going to say the fact that there's no cops in this town, apparently.
And there are no cops in this town. Yes. Well, they have Tom Selleck. He's the chief of police.
Anywhere he moves into town, he just becomes chief of police.
Exactly.
Even in real life.
That would be
Tom Selleck walks in, knocks on the door. That'd be a great SNL skit. Moves into a neighborhood, walks up to the sheriff's office, knocks on the door. I'm Tom Selleck. I moved in this neighborhood. I'm sheriff now. Give me the badge.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Selleck. Here you go.
Okay, here you go.
Here's my gun and my badge. Thank you. And he's always wearing the blue uniform. So Jen and Spencer become very mean-spirited towards each other. And then we get thrown a fucking curveball that Jen is pregnant. And
which is what they put the blame on for everything that's been happening.
Yeah, I guess, but coming out of left field. Yeah. Right, I get it. But there was no indication that, you know, they wanted to start a family or that, you know, they had been trying to do this. It just popped like, oh, you know, we just drove Rob Riggle off a cliff. Oh, by the way, I'm pregnant. Like, well, what the shit? Yeah. Did I miss a scene?
Yeah, because before this, they do the callback where she vomits in the street. Vomiting in public thing gets the final callback of the movie. It's because what happens here is that they wanted a way to explain, you know, why, you know, their relationship changes, like you said. Instead of just making it, it's stress that there are people trying to kill them, so all the things that they're holding in come out. No, there has to be she's a woman. Woman can't be angry unless pregnant.
Yeah, and I think you're right, because if you just leave it at that, you know, I'm stressed out because bullets are flying by my face. And
I'm going to tell you everything, because I don't know.
Right. I think if you just leave it at that, that makes perfect sense. You don't need to bring in this weird B plot.
I don't know if they were trying to make stakes for them.
I get, but I mean, the stakes are already raised. Everyone that they know is an assassin. So I think that's pretty interesting. Yeah. You don't need to bring in the baby.
No, because then from this point, like I said, we can even do sort of a fast forward thing. Every interaction they have from here on out, you just assume somebody's an assassin, and it's probably like a 90% yes, they're an assassin rate.
The only person who's not an assassin is Usher.
Usher and the one guy that complains about his garage door being off, and that it would be an eyesore for the block party, and he just tells him, "Well, then don't look at it."
Right, and he just has that interjected look or dejected look. But yeah, like, what a waste of Usher. He's not even dancing in this movie. Yeah, do they not know he can dance? He's a phenomenal dancer.
Nope, he does not know.
He could be the breakdancing assassin, and they blew it.
This smells like this movie was cast after they did an episode of Punk'd with Usher.
Hey, do you want to be in my movie? Okay, sure.
Yeah, see, I get to kill anyone? Show. That was well done, yeah. Let's sign the waivers, make sure everything's good so we can put this on air and... Yeah, so I have a role in this movie coming up. You want to be in it, Usher?
Usher.
Okay. Yeah.
If anyone should have been an assassin, you make Usher the assassin, man. I mean, you got him. You might as well do it.
Yeah.
He's the big, outside of Ashton Kutcher, he's probably the biggest star in this film. And Tom Selleck, obviously, but.
But no, in 2010, because, you know, that was only a couple years after,
came out. When I was in high school, so I want to say I performed for my talent show in high school.
Oh, so we have secrets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. We're digging into Dan's past here.
Yeah.
The Dan past. the new segment. Yeah, for my junior year, I played a medley with, I was in a band, and Yeah was one of the songs that we played. So that was in 2004? So yeah, well before this, obviously. But he was still very well known.
I clicked on something that was way different than Winfor.
Was it pornography? It was pornography.
No. Right? I was looking for like Usher songs to like match up the dates as you were talking.
Okay.
And I clicked on like a list of best songs of all time, and it just gave me like every song, and I'm like, I just need Usher.
Well, I hope that Hey Ya was not on there.
Yeah, no. So you're right. 04, you know, would be.
Yeah,
it was 04. Yeah. So around this time, we would say about 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this would have been the album after. So maybe he was looking for. This would have been Loving This Club, that time period. OMG.
Oh, okay. That song I do know. I do know that song. So I'll give myself a little credit. Yeah, but they waste Usher here. But everyone else following pretty much at this point is an assassin. So we go into a rinse and repeat mode where Katherine Heigl snaps at Ashton Kutcher. Someone attacks.
Can I
Ashton
say, by
Kutcher.
The way, the delivery package assassin?
Yeah.
I thought it was the guy from a Workaholics.
Yes.
But I do not think it's him.
The shorter guy, right?
Yeah, the guy from Pitch Perfect and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
thought so too, but I think it was just before that came out.
Yeah, he would have been too young at this point.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I want to say Workaholics came out like 2014, 15.
Yeah, it would have been just a little too early, but
yeah. Yeah, but it was not him. The delivery guy gets into a fight with him. His secretary fights him. His one coworker fights him. Everyone's fighting Ashton Kutcher essentially.
Yeah.
So from here on out, it's just like I said, rinse and repeat. We get back to their house, and Alex Borstein and her husband are also gunning for Spencer and Jen. And it turns out, and again, I saw this coming a mile away, the person who put the bounty on Spencer's head was none other than Tom Selleck.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I mean, again, you could see this coming a mile away.
So they match it up. By when I figured it out, besides, I think I figured it out maybe earlier in my head, but I said it out loud. When he goes and finds his old boss that gets shot and is, you know, like, oh, it's two to the heart, one to the head. That's an old school assassin. I was like,
right.
Well, fuck, Tom Selleck's the main bad guy.
Right, who's the only old person in this movie?
Unless it's Catherine O'Hare, which I would have, we'll get to that. But so, you know, you get to this point, you go through the whole thing. You know, he finds the text message, you know, figures out who it is. You know, they keep leaving breadcrumb trails. Like, oh, that photo looks like one your dad took, you know.
Right.
Sort of just really laying it out, like banging it over the head, M. Night Shyamalan style.
Right. You know, like nothing of real importance happens in this movie after a certain point where it just becomes a running gun type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you get to the end, they get to the house. They're walking through the block party with all neighbors pissed, but they're all assassins, you imagine,
right,
at this point. And then it gets to the point that my favorite acting choice in the entire movie is when, you know, well, besides Alex Borstein and her husband having the full-on bulletproof vest, like SOCOM microphones, all gear, you know. Besides that, that was perfect, is when... Casey Wilson walks in with Catherine O'Hara at gunpoint, and Catherine O'Hara is so nonchalant in this scene with a gun pointed like a few feet away from her, just like, "Oh, hi, honey."
Right.
You know, sort of.
I like what you've done with the place.
And then it's like, even when they're talking, it's like, "I need you guys to go sit in the kitchen." Catherine O'Hara just reaches out her hand to like sort of guide Katherine Heigl to the couch, and it's like, it's such a good choice because it finishes what that entire movie has done, which is just show that she's drunk all the time.
Right.
That she's like, probably she's just... so drunk here. It's not even registering what's going on right now in this scene.
Right. You know? Like she knows something's going on, but it's just like, you know, whatever. we'll roll with it.
She's so good in that part. Just
I think she's great in everything she does.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of hers. But
it's the best. Yeah, again, it's the best acting choice in the whole movie.
Yeah, for underutilized me. For sure. Yeah. We find out that Tom Selleck sets him up because he saw that his old boss had reached out to him and he thought that Spencer was on the take again. He was going to go back to his old ways.
Because the old boss was dirty.
And the old boss was dirty. And it turned even out that one of the targets that Spencer was supposed to take out was Tom Selleck. And
because his boss had been dirty, mm-hmm. you know, that's why I felt weird to Ashton Kutcher. You know, Spencer was like, you know, why are we taking this guy out? Again, another thing that happens in the movie that is only meant for a callback later on in the movie.
Right. At that point, we have no, but they make it seem like it's a sort of like big deal. You don't understand why, I guess. But
yeah. And it's just, yeah. And I know I'm making this point, and like I said, it probably happens in every movie, but it just seems like this. They wrote this movie with trying to tie up every single loose end.
Yeah.
In the movie. Yeah. Every single plot point or something they mentioned, you know, gets tied up or mentioned somewhere else to close it off or
right.
becomes part of a bit. There's only one thing they leave exposed, which I don't even know if it might have been an ad-lib moment.
Which part is
that? Catherine O'Hare. When she's doing the trust circle, Katherine Heigl.
Oh,
and
right.
And they're explaining everything, and she goes, remember that time when I took you and your friend out on the boat? And she was like,
yes.
No. And she's like, oh, never mind. I'm good. Like,
yeah, the trust circle capitalizing on that meet the parents fame. Definitely striking while the iron's hot there.
And did they indicate that Ashton Kutcher was Asian? Was that the language?
Yeah, well,
is it Mandarin?
The subtitle said he speaks gibberish. So I don't know if he was trying to be funny or okay. I have no idea. But it turns out that Kutcher basically does the whole, I'm not doing this. I don't want to do it anymore. And he puts his gun down.
Unloads the gun, takes the one out of the chamber.
Right. And then the old cliche of the two shots ringing out, right? And you think, the three shots. Oh, my God, he shot Ashton Kutcher. But nope, he kills Alex Borstein. Oh, yeah. Okay. So we're all good now. And Jen
the revelation to Jen, you know, about that it's the dad was because she looks over at Casey Wilson and sees that she has two to the heart, one to the head.
Right.
And that's when, you know. That's supposed to be like, oh, you know.
Right. Oh, that's the big that's the big reveal kind of thing. Well, and then essentially it ends with Jen telling her parents that they're gonna have a kid, and Catherine O'Hare saying, oh, well, you know, you married your father, and it's like, oh, great, awesome. What a way to end the movie, guys.
Somehow I marry the one man that is exactly like my father, even though I didn't know it.
Right. And
yeah.
And that's essentially the end of the movie. They have the kid. Yeah. They're super protective of the kid. The end. Pretty boring.
Yeah, the only good thing that happens in here, and I'm assuming it's script, or maybe he's a producer, so maybe he just had it added in, was Ashton Kutcher trying to grow the mustache.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even, to me, I didn't find that funny.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, that's the only thing that happens in that scene, really, outside of the... You know, you're supposed to get a big laugh at the end when they hit the button and it goes on and it's laser protection
right.
for the kid. You know,
yeah.
outside of that, the only other thing is him growing the mustache, which I'm like, oh, okay, I see. Again, another thing they bring up early in the movie that they tie in at the end. But yeah, this movie, they're, you know, very jumbled, not very inspired at all.
Yeah. And what did we say earlier before we recorded? It's absurd, right? Yeah. This movie becomes so off the rails, absurd, and it tries to introduce too much, and it doesn't pull it off.
Yeah, like here's, and I'll get you. We'll move into the how to make this better. You know, last segment of this podcast here. I'll start it off. The main thing I do is I think like more so than I forget which movie it was that we watched. Maybe it was Crystal Cranks or something. Where I was like, the framework of this movie is a pretty decent idea, you know?
Okay. Yeah,
I
agree.
You know, the idea of a, you know, assassin going normal, but somehow married into a family of that daughter of an assassin, you know, like, and that he puts sleepers around him. That's one thing we forgot to mention, that, you know, all the people in the life were sleeper agents hired by Tom Selleck's character, you right. know, all yeah, the assassins. And, like, and they so basically absurd. Got activated, you know.
Like, so he uses his immense wealth to pay
or the taxpayer money,
right?
Say works
right. So he uses this all this money to just have these people. He basically pulls a Truman Show, yeah. right? Is that what it is?
Basically, his Spencer's entire job is a sham,
right?
Because all the employees that you see are assassins,
right? So I don't know how they're making money.
Yeah, well, that's why the building's always bad. God damn it! I just got that joke.
But I mean, they are doing jobs, so
yeah. Like, that's why the billing's bad, because none of them are accountants, because they're all assassins.
Because they're all assassins. There you go. Now I get it.
Oh, it's terrible. But anyway, finishing that, the framework of the movie is fine. I think if you did a better job, this could be for any movie, but I think if you found slightly better leads
mm-hmm.
in this, like, even he's way too famous at this point. And he would have already done the Bourne movies.
Yeah.
But like a Matt Damon type in the Ashton Kutcher role.
Sure.
You know, a little bit better of an actor, you know.
Yeah.
A guy.
Yeah, who could actually.
That can carry a movie.
Yeah.
You know, make this much better. You could have made it a series if you got a better actor.
Oh, of course.
You know,
yeah.
In it. Because it could have just been and then, there's probably actresses like Katherine Heigl around at the time. They probably could have slipped that. I just can't think of anyone off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
My main thing to change with this is there's only one plot point I would have liked to, maybe it's cliche, but it's going into my head of how this could have been a series, is that you could have done sort of the Bourne thing,
mm-hmm.
But you could have made Katherine Heigl's character turns out to be an assassin.
Oh, interesting.
You know, but has no idea about Spencer.
So it's like a Mr. and Mrs. Smith type of move.
Sort of thing, where...
Okay.
Did they know they were each assassins when they met?
They didn't. But then they find out they each get a hit on the other person.
Okay. So maybe I'm just thinking of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. But
it sounds like you're thinking of Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Which is a better movie.
Yes. That arguably was a much better movie. Right. Yeah,
and better
definitely actors. Academy Award winner.
Making my point. Yeah. Know,
how do we make
my point?
How do we make killers into Mr. and Mrs. Smith? Go.
And Julie and Brad Pitt.
Yes.
And break up marriages.
And keep Tom Selleck.
Keep Tom. Yeah. But I would have also liked if Catherine O'Hare turned out to be like the mastermind.
Ooh. Instead
you know, like,
of Tom Selleck.
Like the dad was like an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
But had no idea that she was like the one calling the shots.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So again, it's almost like a Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but
yeah.
It's just with the mother-in-law calling the shots.
Yeah. Like, cause I could have, and plus I think she could have done the reveal much better.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Cause you don't expect the drunk, right? The drunk to do it.
Yeah. And that's her cover, is acting like she's drunk all the time.
Right.
You know? But the framework of it is basically, essentially, when did, now I'm curious at when Mr. and Mrs. Smith came out, to see if this is a Armageddon, what's that
deep
other?
Deep Impact. Yeah.
Situation.
Well,
but yeah.
While you're looking that up, I'll get into mine real quick. I'll keep it short and sweet. The way you make this better, you have Ashton Kutcher and Tom Selleck team up here. Katherine Heigl.
Buddy Cop.
Yeah, exactly. Katherine Heigl is taken by Holbrook, right? Because we'll even say Ashton Kutcher, he walks away, he marries Katherine Heigl, and Holbrook kind of, you know, he comes back and he gives, like I told you, you can't walk away from this, kidnaps Katherine Heigl, and now you have Kutcher and Selleck who, you know, they're not friends, really. Selleck doesn't really like Kutcher, and he tells him, listen, I was a spy before I met your daughter. They took her. We got to get her back. So now you have the whole, the old school assassin and Ashton Kutcher going to get Katherine Heigl back. And then, you keep Katherine O'Hara in there, and you know, she provides some comedy relief and whatnot. But I think that's how you do it. And you can make the neighbors assassins or whatever. And it's just, I think you just have a much better pairing with Kutcher and Selleck because they hate each other. And you kind of have the old Lethal Weapon aspect going where you have the old Danny Glover and the young Mel Gibson going. And I'm sure they could play well off each other. Although in this movie, they didn't really play well off each other in the few scenes they had together. But that's essentially how I make it better.
Yeah, and it's essentially like it. Like I said, you take the framework of what each of these characters are and make a better movie out of it. Just basically lift the entire plot out of this. But right. Each character still has their, you know, their backs, and make a completely better movie out of it. And probably a series of movies. I mean, hell, they made 3 Fokker movies.
Right.
You know,
that's true.
Somehow. But yeah. I was looking, Mr. and Mrs. Smith was 2004.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe the guy wrote the script when that movie. But yeah, I thought it might have been like an Armageddon version. Yeah. And it also seems like Mr. and Mrs. Smith was kicking around a while just looking at the trivia. Like so many names were attached to it. Originally, it was supposed to be Nicole Kidman and Brad Pitt.
Okay. Interesting. I did not know that.
You know, yeah. But anyway, so yes, essentially, I think I basically just remade Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yep.
And you made the spy version of Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. Listen, I'm all for it. Let's combine the two.
Well, I mean, in Hollywood nowadays, you know, with remakes and
sure
reboots and things going on.
I don't know if this is really worthy of either of those, but you know what? Why not? I'm all for it. Let's do this.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I think that's going to wrap it up for us here at They Called This a Movie. As Anthony would say, plug your shit, Mark.
All right. Yeah. So Stranger Damies every Wednesday, Google, iTunes, you know, I don't think I put it on Stitcher. There'll be every Monday or so for the next couple weeks, I'll be trying to catch up or multiple times a week on video versions of the podcast. So be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel, which I believe is still tinyurl.com/strangerdamies. I don't know how long tinyurls last, so that may be wrong, but if so, I will redo it again so that it's good. But yeah, so be sure to listen to it. We're getting towards our 100th episode. I'm trying to think of something special. It'll be episode 2 of the next session. So we'll see. If it all depends on what you guys do in episode 99. if I can squeeze anything special, or it might just be, you know, fun at the beginning sort of thing. But yeah, so be sure to be on the lookout for that. We're going to have a Talking with Strangers coming up where we answer your questions. As usual, we will have new member, Jonathan, will be on that. So if you have any questions for him, feel free to, you know, send a tweet to @StrangerDamies. I know you're going to plug all the shit for that when we go back to you, Dan. But, you know, and as usual, you know, we're just learning how to do all this stuff. So if you want to yell at us, send us any criticism, you know, it's @TomSchuster on Twitter. And just, you know, remember, we know what's going on, so you can send it completely without context.
Yeah.
So.
Very good. Yeah, for me, @DAquino122 on Twitter, and as Mark was saying, our Stranger Damies Real Play D&D podcast is also on Twitter. It's @StrangerDamies. You can also find the Stranger Damies account on Instagram, same thing, @StrangerDamies. So if you want, if you're an artiste, or you want something made for you, possibly, just, you know, hit us up and we'll, you know, we'll put it on the page. If you have, we're getting a lot of good feedback from new friends that we're making on Twitter. They seem to enjoy it. So if you like what you see, hit us up. If you like it, you don't like it, and just talk, you know, we're always open to talk. But yeah, that's it for me. And oh yeah, and of course you could find us on Geek Vibes Nation, right? They like to plug our stuff.
Be sure to tune into their stuff. They do a lot of geek culture, a lot of good shows on there. Geeks Against the Grain, the Top 10. Some good people over there, you know, Joanne and Tia. So be sure to, you know, give them a listen. There's always something every day on their feed. So you'll definitely find something you would want to listen to after you're done listening to our podcast.
Right. Yeah. Us first, everyone else second. They are at Geek Vibes Nation on Twitter. And, you know, go to their website at geekvibesnation.com. Email them, geekvibesnation@gmail.com. Just let them know that you appreciate what they're doing. And like Mark said, just a bunch of good people all around. So, yeah, I think that's going to do it for us here at They Called This a Movie. I'm Dan Aquino for Mark Myers and our dearly departed good friend, Anthony DelVecchio. We are telling the director of Killers, Robert Luttig, to go fuck himself.